Good evening. I'm Kent Walsh, senior editor of the Albuquerque Journal, and I'd like to welcome all of you to our forum tonight on higher education in New Mexico, sponsored by the Journal, KANW-FM, and the Council of University Presidents. For the next 2 hours, you're going to hear a discussion and a conversation by some of our leading educators and lawmakers about the challenges facing higher education in New Mexico. And I think most of you have heard about some of those challenges. Declining enrollments, budget cuts, a lottery scholarship that won't provide the same level of support that it has, competition from out-of-state institutions, a completely changing world of higher education, and not just in New Mexico. The question will be, how do we adapt to the new circumstances? You're also going to hear about some bright spots, because there are some. There are many. Some of our schools are doing an excellent job improving graduation rates. CNM and UNM stand out. There have been significant strides taken to cut bureaucratic spending and provide better education bang for the buck. New Mexico State University's done a fine job in this area. At the state level, it's much easier for our students to transfer credits from one institution to another. Under Secretary Barbara Dameron, we are a much more student-friendly student value system. Some of our schools are experimenting and doing a fine job with online learning. I think we'll hear about some of that from Western New Mexico University. On the ground, so to speak, we have some world-class faculty. We have some exciting research projects going on at different institutions. And a lot of our kids are getting great college educations. Still, there are serious questions. Do we have too many schools? Is our system sustainable? Can we afford the system we have? Or can we afford not to have the system we have, which provides a lot of access in a large geographic state? And every one of our institutions of higher education, and I believe 31 is the correct number, Secretary, every one of those is ingrained in the social and economic fabric of the community in which it resides. Some are even enshrined in our Constitution. Yet some would argue powerfully that we have to make difficult changes in the system to save the system. Before I introduce our panel, I'd like to thank Bill Lang, publisher of the Journal, for hosting this event, Karen Moses for her work in helping to organize it, and our co-sponsors tonight, Mark Saavedra, Council of University Presidents Executive Director. Mark, would you stand up and wave for the radio audience? And Michael Brasher from KAMW, who's here for tonight's broadcast. Michael, where are you? Are you somewhere? He's listening. Okay. With this, I'd like to introduce our panel tonight, and it's, I think, an impressive panel and some of our best minds. Higher Education Secretary Barbara Dameron, New Mexico State University Chancellor Gary Carruthers, who gets to say former governor on his resume, and cowboy ethics teacher and some other stuff. Western New Mexico University President Joe Shepherd, and full disclosure, I got my undergrad degree from Western in economics, so I'm one of the people who benefited from this system, along with a law degree from University of New Mexico. UNM Interim President Shawi Abdallah, New Mexico State University Faculty President Chris Brown, CNM President Dr. Kathy Winograd. We also, by phone, and we have large portraits, gentlemen, of Representative Larry Larrañaga of Albuquerque and State Senator John Arthur Smith of Deming. And we very much appreciate their participation. They graciously agreed to do this panel, but we're in Farmington for a Legislative Finance Committee meeting today. So they worked all day, and they're at the home of Farmington Mayor Tommy Roberts participating by phone. So thank you, gentlemen, very much. I also want to recognize a couple of people in the audience. Northern New Mexico College President Rick Bailey. Rick, would you say hello? And New Mexico Tech President, Stephen Wells. Stephen? And I expect before the evening's over, we will hear from both of you, as well as from some members of the audience. We do want some audience participation. In terms of format, each panelist will make an initial presentation of 5 to 7 minutes. And I hope we'll think of questions to ask one another and sort of challenge and question some hypotheses and have that sort of robust higher education debate that I think many of us would like to have. And with that, I would like to ask Secretary Dameron to sort of tee this up for us. Secretary?
Thank you very much, Mr. Waltz, and welcome to all of you. Thank you so much for taking your time on a Wednesday evening like this to come hear about higher education. We are thrilled that you are here, and for our radio listeners and our Facebook folks, we're very, very glad that you're interested enough in higher education. We do have some exciting things to share with you tonight. And our goal, of course, is to keep our radio audience awake these next 2 hours as we talk all this exciting stuff. We'll see who's awake while they're still listening to the radio after these 2 hours go on. So let me just give you an overview of our system, here in New Mexico. We are a very decentralized, what we call a decentralized higher education system. The good thing about that is we actually play in the sandbox quite well in a number of ways. One way of that is what we call an attainment goal. We have come together, all 31 of our public higher education institutions, to have an attainment goal. What type of post-secondary credential, certificate, associate, bachelor's, master's, doctorate degrees, should this state have for working people ages 25 to 64? So all 31 of our public higher education institutions came together, along with business folks, workforce development, K-12 and such, and we decided on the route to 66. 66% of our working age people in New Mexico will have a post-secondary credential by the year 2030. Many states are looking at these attainment goals. We're one of the early states getting out there with an attainment goal on that. But back to our system. We actually have 31 boards of some type. We have 31 public higher education institutions. Let me break those down for you. We have 7 that are universities called out in the Constitution. 3 are research universities, UNM, NMSU, and Tech. 4 are what we call comprehensive regional universities, Western New Mexico University, Eastern New Mexico University, New Mexico Highlands University, and Northern New Mexico College. We also have a military institute, a very good military institute, New Mexico Military Institute, which is also called out in the Constitution. So we have 8 entities called out in the Constitution, each to have its own board of directors or regents. We also have a school for the blind and visually impaired, also called out in the institution. We have a school for the deaf, also called out in the institution. We then have 7 independent community colleges, represented here in Central New Mexico, the largest of our community colleges and the largest in many areas. We also have 4 tribal colleges. So all of those that I've spoken about thus far have their own governing board. That's essentially 21 systems in our state. In addition, we have 10 branch community colleges, and those are community colleges that are part of one of the 4 years. New Mexico State University has 4 branches. University of New Mexico has 4 branches. And Eastern New Mexico University has 2 branches. Those 10 institutions have advisory boards, but they are part of the universities I mentioned. Now, you will hear tonight, we have too many institutions. We don't know the answer to that question tonight as we sit here. We may have too many, we may not have too many. That needs to be studied thoroughly. In New Mexico, amongst all of our 31 public higher education institutions, we have 77 access points. Now that means either the main campus or a branch, as I talked about, what we sometimes call a TWIG, a learning center, some higher education entity by which a student can come to that facility and get some higher education classes. We have 77 of those in our state for 2 million people. Now, just by comparison, Arizona has 211 of those for 6.7 million population. So we actually have less per capita than Arizona. Our enrollment. In 2016, amongst our public higher education institutions, we had around 133,000 students enrolled in either part-time or full-time work. We did have 153,000, pretty much at its peak, in 2010. Of that 133,000 students, about 1/3 of those are at our research institutions, about 10% are at our comprehensive universities, but the majority, 55%, are at branch and independent community colleges. Now, we've had this recent dip in the enrollment trend. Is that unique to New Mexico? No, this is actually mirroring national trends. Many times when there is a recession, what happens? People go back to school. There's not jobs, so people go back to school so they can get better trained to have a better job. So it's not uncommon to see an increase in enrollment right after a recession. So we saw a post-recession, we saw a bump in enrollment. And in recent years, we've seen those numbers come back down to essentially what they were pre-recession as the economy is recovering. Right now, there's no evidence that students are leaving in large numbers to attend out-of-state schools. There are some instances of that, but we don't have evidence showing large numbers doing that. Now, we've talked about access. I'm very interested in not only access, but success. So we get our students in the door, right? We have these access points. We have all these institutions. And let me just pause here and also let you know that we have 182 private post-secondary schools in our state as well. And through the Higher Education Department, we register and license those 182 schools. Tonight, we're focusing on the public higher education institutions. So are we getting kids to the finish line? That's why we're here, to get students into post-secondary, to get them a quality education so they can either go into the workforce ready for the jobs of today, tomorrow, and the future, or to get them ready for further education, to get as much education as they possibly can. I'm a first generation, not only college, I don't always like to say this, but my parents didn't even go to high school. I'm the first person in my family, my parents, my grandparents, et cetera, to even go to high school, much less to finish high school and college, some master's degrees and a doctoral degree. So yes, I believe very strongly that getting that credential makes a difference because it's made a huge difference in my life. We're seeing improvement with that in our state. We call them awards. That means credential completion. Did one complete a certificate, associate degree, bachelor's, master's, or doctorate degree? So we use the word awards for that. So we actually have seen an increase. From 2011 to academic year 2016, we've seen an increase of 20% in our state. Now that's for a lot of reasons. We have a funding form that looks at performance outcomes. Are you getting students out the door and into success and finished? So we've had, in academic year 16, we had about 23,000 awards that were given in that year the students earned. So I was asked to also say a few words about strengths and weaknesses, and I've chosen a couple for each of those. Our strengths as a system is we do have good access. A student can barely go a few miles without seeing an access point to a higher education institution. So we have the access down pat with that. We're affordable. We are quite affordable. We'll be saying more about that in a moment. But our tuition rates are very low compared to our adjacent states and to the peer institutions. Also, students who graduate from our four-year colleges and universities see an average return of more than 150% of tuition costs within 5 years, as was just reported. A new report says that our state ranks second in the nation on a good list. We rank second in the nation when it comes to the economic benefits of an academic degree. That's very, very exciting for our state. But the main strength we have is actually our collaboration. What we have done across these essentially 21 systems, all my counterparts around the country, when I tell them I get to work with 31 boards, 21 systems, there's not a one that wants to change place with me. But what we have done across this state, we've looked at remediation, students who come from K-12 who are not ready for college. We have done alternative forms of remediation that are just really increasing how students get to college credit-bearing courses. We're seeing great results in that in our state. We're doing that. We have 5 models that came from the ground up from our institutions with that. And our big thing that we've done collaboratively is what we call the trifecta of articulation reform. I'll be saying a few words about that later, but let me just say, because the credit goes to all of our institutions that are here. For a long time, we know that our students in our state move from one higher institution to another higher than the average rate. So a student will start at C&M, they want to start there, take those first few courses, maybe their freshman year, their sophomore year, then they want to transfer to UNM. And they call over to UNM and say, can I be accepted? UNM says, you bet. And they says, great. Well, all these courses I took, they'll transfer, right? And UNM says, you bet. They transfer. Come on over. Cross that street and come from C&M to UNM and come on over. So the student goes over there and registers and the student finds out, they need to register as a freshman, not as a sophomore or a junior. Well, why is that? Well, the credits transfer, but they did what we call articulate. In higher ed, articulate means, does that count? Does it count towards one's major? And because they say, well, UNM says to NMSU, or one says to the other, you know that freshman English course you took? Not quite good enough. Ours is better at our institution. In 1995, the legislature asked the state to fix that. When I came in as secretary in 2015, we're still looking at that, and I'm here to tell you, we, everyone here, and many people in this room, have worked hard together to fix that. We have looked at every single lower division course, every single freshman, sophomore class. That's about 10,000 courses. We've looked at every syllabi. I convened 79 groups of faculty, 79 disciplines. I was a faculty member. We're a motley crew. We don't always like to get together and play well, because I'll say, you know, Carruthers, your English class is not as good as mine. Mine's better. And so how do we get faculty to agree on that? We brought in 79 groups of faculty. I'm going to call out Dr. Noonan in the room, who's led this and has done yeoman's work on this. And the faculty together have looked at, how can these courses align? We're not changing curriculum. We're not stepping on academic freedom. How do these courses align? Because the legislature actually gave me some authority, saying I could just put some numbers up, saying, here's the common course numbering. All of our English classes will be ENGL 1011. I had the authority, which I don't have much authority in HED, to do that. But I want this to stick. We all work together, faculty that are here in the room, provosts that are here in the room. I see Provost White, many others who worked with us so hard on this to get this done. And we now have a system. So, yes, we're having successes with that. We also are looking at the general education requirements for our students, and how can that be what's best for the workforce of today, tomorrow, and the future. And then we're also looking at what we call meta majors, where we put groups of majors together. So as the students do flow in and out of our different institutions, that those classes towards their major can transfer with them. So yes, we do have some strengths with that. Briefly, our weaknesses before I turn it over here. It is hard working with 31 boards with our decentralization. It makes coordinating much more difficult, and it is inefficient due to the 21 systems. Our students are too often underprepared for college. And also, while we have low percentages rates of per capita student debt, our students have the highest rate of default of their federal and private loans in the country. And those are our weaknesses as a system. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Secretary. We're going to go to Chancellor Carruthers right now. And then we're going to, in deference to the legislators, we're going to go to Senator Smith. Is that okay with you, Senator Smith? Can you hear this?
We'll work fine.
Okay, great. Gary, Chancellor, President,
okay.
Governor.
Well, thank you very much.
You've been stirring the pot here lately.
Yeah. Well,
on the budget,
I'm on foreign territory here, so I probably won't do a whole lot of that.
Well, we were kind of hoping you would, but before we do, I do want to congratulate you on Mexico State's number two ranking in this Brookings report. It's called Ladders, Legs, or Laggards, Labs, or Laggards, which public universities contribute most. New Mexico State was ranked number two, University of New Mexico number eight. So congratulations to both of you. But Chancellor, we'd like to hear your thoughts about
okay.
this.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I bring you greetings from New Mexico State University, the Yale of the Yuccas. And I only use that when I come to Albuquerque, because the Lobos say things like that when they come down to my part of the country. I'll speak just briefly on several of the challenges facing higher education in New Mexico. And first of all is, we don't have a culture of higher education. We do not believe in our generations right now, as when I grew up, you were expected to go into higher education. You could go to two-year programs, or you could go to higher education. But your mother and father would break your plate if you didn't go to college, and you weren't to come home, and you were. And by the way, back in those days, they sent your grades home, so there was a certain discipline that we don't have anymore, because they were trying to help you go to college, and then they'd send the grades home. And I wish they'd never gotten away from that. I think promotion in our higher education system would be a lot better if we had not done that. We have a flat population. Population has actually declined some, and we have the worst dropout rate in the country. And as a consequence, we have a flat population, no culture of higher education, and a dropout rate that we're suffering in New Mexico. your pools get pretty narrow. The pools get pretty narrow pretty fast. And so I think we ought to work on the culture of higher education. It's a challenge, I think, all of us in doing it. So I want to thank the Albuquerque Journal, and as well as the El Paso Times had a similar panel to this some time ago with those of us in the southern part of the state and in El Paso. And we're going to need to have these kinds of forums and have this discussion about the culture of higher education, why it's important to go to school, what the economic benefits are, the quality of life benefits, the health benefits of having a certification or a degree from higher education. Now, I will tell you next, it's really a whole new world. I'm going to tell you a story about Missouri. University of Missouri is a great university, and they recently discovered that their fall enrollment is going to decline by 8%. And I think they've had a decline over the last 3 or 4 years of 25%. Now, this is University of Missouri. We're talking University of Missouri. Big-time football, big-time operations. They have also some divisions out in Missouri. And so all of a sudden, people said, well, it's because of that fiasco in 2015 with the football team and that sort of thing. And to be honest with you, that probably is an element. So I want to tell you the point with Missouri is that's one problem. And that's a problem we have in New Mexico because we're always delivering negative news about higher education. So negative news hurts enrollment and hurts interest in universities in our great state. And so we get negative news. It happens in higher education. We're like everybody else. There's some things that we don't do as well as we should, but there are also some things that we do very, very well. And for some reason, we haven't learned the craft of promoting the good things, and we spend most of our time defending against the negatives. But saying negative things about a university hurts your enrollment and hurts your retention. So I bring that up too because it's a Missouri thing, and that's what they discovered. Missouri discovered some other things too. They're in Missouri, their population is going down. They recruit mostly in Illinois and Iowa, their population is stable or going down. The third thing they discovered in the study of why is this happening to us is they really never built the infrastructure necessary to encounter these kinds of conditions. They just didn't expect it. They believe, build it and they will come. God sent us here, they will send all the children here and we're going to be fine. They did not have the infrastructure at University of Missouri to do the recruiting, to do the retention, and those kinds of things. And as a consequence, Missouri discovered the hard way by not preparing in advance for something they did not foresee. So the thesis very simply is, it's a whole new world. It's really a whole new world out there. The secretary said, this is happening all across the country. It's a whole new world in the private sector. I just read the other day that I think Sears and Kmart are having to close down several stores. I don't know whether they're doing it in New Mexico or not. But if you read the paper, if you read the business paper, nearly every day, or at least every week, you will see word about companies that are having to restructure or reduce employment or do something else to make their company viable again. Higher education is now at that point where it's time to restructure. It's time to think of different ways of doing it. Now, we're traditional. We were formed in 1888, and I think we still have habits from 1888. The best one is eating chili. And other than that, those habits from 1888 probably are not as good as they ought to be. So we hired a Deloitte company to come in and look at our university. And we asked the question, are we overstaffed? The Deloitte company, for a handsome price, studied our university and said, when I challenged them, I said, are we overstaffed? They looked at me and said, you're poorly organized. And it occurred to me, we haven't reorganized in a long period of time. We have done it this way with these colleges and these divisions forever. So we started a process about 2 years ago called Transforming New Mexico State University into a 21st Century University. And so we have six teams working on that. I won't describe them in totality because it's not the only strategy we're following. But I chaired team number one that looked at the actual organization of the university, non-academic, because Deloitte said your span of control is 3-1. That means for every boss, you have 3 workers. The span of control in most institutions are 8-12-1. But we had lots of bosses, and only three workers for each boss. That's a problem. And then the other bad habit we fell into is we had too many layers of management. In large organizations, they have more layers of management. And in smaller organizations, you should be able to get by with three, no more than four. We had six. So all of a sudden, then we had to squash the university this way, and then we had to eliminate certain supervisory positions and restructure. And when we did that, the secretary was now a director. We had directors who directed nobody, if you can imagine. So we had the secretary who's over here in our flow chart, and she's a director of being really smart and advocating for higher education, and that's her job. But she doesn't direct anybody. We put her over here in a public relations department at a, perhaps a little lower level, and then we reclassify the position as to what it should be paid, but we don't take her money away from her, and she gets paid handsomely for a job right now. We don't take her money away, we reclassify the position. When that position is refilled next time, it's gotta be at the right. We had not properly classified our employees for a long period of time. So we did that. We had team two was support staff. We looked at support staff. We had a maldistribution of support staff. We had some departments with four administrative assistants, 200 students and 10 faculty, and we had departments with 700 students and 20 faculty members and one administrative assistant. We had to go through and straighten that out. We had team three was on ICT, it's the computer systems, very fragmented. Everybody at New Mexico State University had to have their own IT operation, and so it's terribly fragmented. We had 14 email servers, more than Hillary Clinton ever thought of having. We had 14 email servers. This is a problem with running them, and it's a real problem with securing them. So now what we're trying to do is centralize ICT. The savings are not going to be profound, the efficiency, but we hope the customer service will be a lot better. Team four is our financial services. Here again, we were making in finances, somebody goes on a trip, they hand their voucher to the administrative assistant who scribbles on it, hands it to the department head, scribbles on it, hands it to the dean, scribbles on it, hands it to somebody else. We were doing five or six touches of those kinds of pieces of paper. Right now we're down to two touches. And you have to do those kinds of things if you're going to be efficient. We just grew up that way. That's the way we operated. So we're doing a lot better in that category. We have what's called financial service centers. And now we're bringing business managers from the units out here. We're bringing them into central so that we don't have so much duplication. We have P cards, which are credit cards. They're university credit cards. Hard to control. The faculty member or the chancellor can run around with his P card and buy anything. It's just like having a MasterCard or Visa card. The problem is we had contracts for discounts of places for computers and office supplies and that sort of thing. But the people with P cards just bought them wherever they wanted to. And so we told them they had to go to Office Max because we had a contract there. You would have thought Office Max was in Bernalillo and not in Las Cruces. Oh, my God, that's a long ways around here. You just go on your computer and order and they'll deliver it to you. So it's those little things, those little bad habits that you get into that we had to fix. Team five is in procurement. We had not taken advantage of large contracts. Here again, it was a very paper process. We're not very competitive. I'm going to just quickly tell you what we think we can save right off the top of these five teams. Team one, $5.2 million savings on a recurring basis. Team two, about $600,000. Team three, about a million, it'll be about a million. Team four, $2.1 million. Team five, $1.7 million. About $11 million of just restructuring just the administrative enterprise. Now team six is looking at colleges. Should we merge colleges? Do we have too many departments? Do we have too many degrees? What are we doing? Do we pay all of our department heads equally? The answer is no, we have different pay scales. Should department heads be paid 12 months or should they be paid 10 months? So we're going through that restructuring, and to make it work, we have a lot of the faculty members having to do it, because when you get on the academic side, you're into what's called shared governance. And that is a sensitive issue. Shared governance is a tradition in higher education. It essentially means the faculty control the curriculum and the selection of those people in the academic area. That's what shared governance is. So don't ever hire a provost without asking the faculty. Don't ever hire a department head. Don't even hire another faculty member in your department without involving your faculty members. So shared governance is important. So now team six is looking at that. But that's not all we do. I learned a long time ago in economics, somewhere along the way, that the way to success is to early to bed, early to rise, work very hard, and advertise. And what we're going to do is we're going to advertise more. All the for-profits are advertising, and they're advertising, and they're charging a whole lot more than our universities are charging for programs that are not being provided by the kind of faculty that we have. And so we have had to get into the advertising game. And then lastly, I will just tell you that students don't like the old style school, the old dormitory that had the two bunks and a closet, and they don't buy that anymore. So we're having to build new dormitories. We require freshmen to live on campus. We're going to have to build new dormitories because a student today wants a different quality of life than you and I did. We have a now centralized advising center, and we think it's very important that all students get consistent advising, and we do a lot of work in retention. So those are the kinds of things we're doing at New Mexico State University, but we're having to do it because there's a whole new world in higher education.
Thank you, Chancellor. We're going to go now to Senator John Arthur Smith from Farmington. So we're going to change up our order a little bit here, but Senator, maybe you would like to add a dose of fiscal reality to our forum tonight, since you're the guy at the end of the day, one of the people who really has to decide who gets what out of limited resources.
Okay. Well, John Arthur Smith, and I'm actually from Deming, but we're up in Farmington with the Legislative Finance Committee, having hearings throughout the state of New Mexico. I have higher education. I have a comprehensive school in Silver City, and I have New Mexico State University at Las Cruces, which is a research institution. For a bit of disclosure, I graduated from the University of New Mexico too many years ago, and the reason I went to New Mexico University of New Mexico versus New Mexico State, I thought I was getting a long way from home from Deming in those days. But with that being said, first and foremost, I want to thank the taxpaying public of the state of New Mexico. Taxpaying public supports higher education on a per capita basis better than almost any state in the country. Almost 13% of our general fund money, we're talking $750 million this year after the cuts, is going to higher education on that. And so the public, on one hand, we wish they were would support more, but I certainly appreciate the support that the public has given higher education, which tells me that they appreciate and they value higher education. Many years ago, when I was a freshman, I've served in the New Mexico State Senate now for 29 years. I objected to a comprehensive school moving into Rio Rancho, not because they shouldn't move into Rio Rancho. I was concerned that they were having to cut the pie and another piece on that, but they saw enrollment opportunity there. But I was fearful that that would dilute the resources available for the mission of that comprehensive school. I was also upset with the research institution there in Albuquerque because they weren't taking care of the local market. So as a result, I was pretty much outspoken, and quite frankly, I'm probably too outspoken. But the bottom line is that we should have been doing something 25 years ago, and it was flagged. We've got more institutions than what we can finance. I appreciate the higher education institutions, and we just heard Chancellor Carruthers talk about the adjustments they're making at New Mexico State. But the bottom line is that we've cut that pie into so many pieces that it's very difficult for us to do justice financially to all the institutions in the state of New Mexico. And as a result, we're feeling the crunch and trying to make the adjustments. The area been heavily involved in, the universities in the last year and probably 4 months have had to make total cuts of 9% based on a base budget of $750 to $800 million. You can put another... we were bumping $900 million at one time that we were putting into the universities. One of the objections that I've had was that some of us saw that these cuts were absolutely necessary and that the revenues to the state were not going to be there, but the state was delinquent in notifying state government and higher education how severe those cuts were going to be, and we should have been in special session probably 6 to 8 months before we were, so they would have more time to put on the brakes. Now they were faced with a situation when we were delinquent in putting on the brakes to telling the universities that they had a clear time frame to make those adjustments, which is extremely painful and contrary to prudent planning. So as a result, we've into a situation where we're in very precarious grounds right now. But the universities have been adjusting and have been making adjustments all along. I appreciate New Mexico State University. I think they probably started a year and a half sooner than most universities, trying to see how they were going to remodel the delivery of higher education in the state of New Mexico. The other little component that we have that the legislature is involved in is in the lottery scholarship. And most people really don't fully understand the lottery scholarship. If they have students, they were saying, enroll in the graduates of high schools in New Mexico. If they have their kids that are going to the university, they're saying, that you should have given us notice it's going to be reduced. Our lottery is a mature lottery. It's not generating any more money. We haven't diverted any of that money from higher education at all. And so as a result, what's happened, when we keep reducing higher ed, you force the universities, and the administration's done some of this, and the legislature's done some of this, because we used to take credit for a tuition increase, but we're forcing higher tuition increases at the universities. But the lottery, being a mature lottery, no longer is delivering 100%. Last year was down to 90%. It looks like this next year it's going to be down to 60% on that, which, quite frankly, is a real bargain. There's not many states on New Mexico, on graduates within their states, that are picking up the price of tuition, or even 60% of it. So it's a real bargain. As a footnote for the public, the institutions draw down about 85% of all lottery dollars, and the comprehensive schools draw down about 15% of the lottery money. So in the future, we could probably redirect and encourage more students to go to less expensive schools until they're prepared to enter a research institution, if that is their desire. And that would take some restructuring, but I'm not certain the political will is to do that. The long term, what needs to be done is try to trim back on the facilities that Secretary Dameron was talking about. The legislature is to blame, the executive branch is to blame, and the taxpayers that want the presence of higher education in their small communities are to blame, because they're pushing for that. But there is a price tag on that. And as a result, we've reached a point in the state of New Mexico where we just cannot fund all of the facilities that we presently have. So the challenge is going to be, how do we make the adjustment into the future? When I talk about the facility in Rio Rancho and a school, a comprehensive school coming into that market area, I also have to think about long-term, when did we notify the executive that something needed to be done? I have letters that I've written to executives, not just this executive, but prior executives, suggesting some of the cuts that need to be made and some of the adjustments that absolutely need to be made on that. And I've never had a response from either of the executives in the past. So hopefully we're on the threshold of somebody maybe having to do something that may not be proper, but is totally fiscally responsible. And tough decisions have to be made, and I think the public will fully understand, because I think most of the public wants us to be responsible with their dollars, because those are the dollars that we're actually spending. So I'm looking forward to the debate and the discussion and the suggestions of what's going to happen. But it's sort of like consolidating small public education facilities, that it's a guarantee defeat. in your next election if you even address that issue. But the bottom line now, we've got a mixed bag of what's going on with higher education and public education with the facilities we have. We have a lot of public education students that are attending facilities of higher education, and it's on the dual enrollment. And the universities are providing a service to the public education students, but it is not covering the cost of that enrollment. Have been well aware of this shortcoming, but we haven't had the money to plug that hole and fill that gap. But the bottom line is the higher education is subsidizing what I think is a public education responsibility on that, and public education needs to step to the plate and assist there and transfer all of those dollars for the dual credits. But those are just a few of the problems that we deal with. On the positive side, another issue that I keep talking about or keep hearing about is that we're losing our college graduates to out-of-state companies because we don't have jobs. Quite frankly, I've been monitoring a pocket down at New Mexico State where I've encouraged young people to move out of the state because I do not want them just locked into what always has been in the state and what it will always be in the state. And I've encouraged those students to go out and work across the country, find jobs elsewhere. And to my surprise, many of those students have done that. And now they're coming back to me and saying, I've moved back to New Mexico, and I'm bringing my education back to New Mexico. I'm bringing my work experience back to New Mexico. And I think that's a number that nobody is really watching right now, but I think it's going to be beneficial to the taxpaying public in the state of New Mexico. I believe that practice, quite frankly, has been going on for many years, but I'm really enthused that we have students that are starting to move back. I cannot quantify that. This is a very subjective, but I've had contact with numerous college graduates of New Mexico that are starting to migrate back to New Mexico, and they're going to bring back fresh thoughts, fresh ideas, new ideas to the state of New Mexico, and that's going to be beneficial to our state in the long term. We are very fortunate in the state of New Mexico with the facilities that we have. I personally would like to see a restructuring of oversight and management. I've said for many years when a Board of Regents is selected, they should be, and they're confirmed by the Senate, they should be loyal to the institution that they're overseeing and try and make certain that those institutions are economically efficient, futuristic in the future, and encouraging recruitment in the state of New Mexico. What I have found in the last few years, a lot of the Board of Regents are loyal to the governor because of the appointment, and that's happened under a couple, three different governors since I've been here. I would advocate a structure that once a Board of Regents is selected, that their loyalty is to the oversight of that university and the support or lack or pulling of support of management at the university level and not beholden to the governor that appointed them to office. We've had far too much of that the last few years in the state of New Mexico, and that's happened both with Democrat governors and with Republican governors. They're trying to micromanage, and we've got some very, very bright people, administrators, overseeing higher education in the state of New Mexico, and I appreciate their efforts, but I fully expect when they have to make the tough decisions, they've always briefed the Board of Regents, but I think the Board of Regents should be supportive of their administration rather than of the people that are appointing them, or of the confirmation process of the New Mexico State Senate once they've achieved that level of regent.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you very much for that honest and forthright assessment from your viewpoint. And I'm sure that the audience here had some fairly glum faces as you were recounting some of the statistics and some of the information. We appreciate you taking time from your evening after an all-day hearing to do this, and we will get back to Representative Larrañaga after our next speaker. So again, thank you very much, Senator. We're going to go now to President Shepherd from Western, and You just heard Senator Smith say you're his, one of his. And I was at a recent awards ceremony. It was a military awards banquet, and one of the young naval reserve officers being honored as he got up to get his award here in Albuquerque, they said Officer Trujillo has earned both his bachelor's and master's at Western New Mexico University while he's been in our reserve program. So I walked up to him afterwards and congratulated him and said, how did you like Silver City? And he said, well, I really never really went there. He said, I did the whole thing online, all 6 years. He said it was stable faculty. I really felt like I knew all my faculty. So that's sort of the whole new face of education where somebody in Albuquerque is saying, yeah, I have my bachelor's and my master's from Western, but I really never set foot on the campus, which is a really nice campus, which raises the question of where do you allocate those dollars? The really nice campus and the dorms and the football team, or can you do all that while still competing for that new student like this young naval officer who's, I'm sure, also looking at places like Arizona State and things like that. But I thought perhaps that's an area you could kind of walk us down and talk about your strategy at one of the comprehensive schools.
Well, thank you very much for that question, as well as for the opportunity to address it and a couple more issues. And if you don't mind, I'd like to, I think this has been recorded, if I could use that as a soundbite in our next commercial, I hope I have your permission to do so. But of course, you heard from my colleague, the Yale of the Yucca, now you're going to hear from the Harvard of the Gila. And one of the things that we have to understand in leading up to the answer to that question is New Mexico is ranked fifth in terms of its sparsity of people to land mass. We have 17 people for every square mile. Now, if you put that in perspective, and we talked about access points and so forth, amongst that, we have seven universities. Three of them are classified as research institutions, New Mexico State, University of New Mexico, New Mexico Tech over in Socorro. And four of us are classified as comprehensive institutions, Western New Mexico University, Eastern New Mexico University, Highlands, and Northern New Mexico University. And within that, if I go out now into the United States, there are literally thousands of universities out there tucked away in beautiful mountains and hills similar to what we have in Silver City. And so now you have this institution that's been around since 1893, was designed and developed as a normal school, and it's now competing not against who shows up in Silver City, not really competing against down the street in Las Cruces, but is competing globally, competing in terms of our quality of education, competing in terms of our pricing, competing in every sense of the word. We have students who come from all over the world without coming to Western New Mexico University. And so we, along with our colleague institutions, have a real challenge. But let me give you some additional statistics. One out of two of our students is above the age of 24. You know, we always talk about in higher education, you're going to hear tonight, that we think of this traditional 18-year-old who just graduated from high school, wants to go and, you know, go to UNM or go to State or go to one of the other fine institutions or even ours. But one in two of our students is not that type of a person. One in two of our students is a first-generation student. You heard that definition earlier. They don't have a family support mechanism that understands what higher education is about. One out of two of our students happens to be remedial, meaning they graduated from our high schools or other state high schools, doesn't really matter, and they are not proficient enough in the languages in English and writing or in mathematics. And so now all of a sudden we're confronted with something very important. How do we stay relevant? And how do we do it in a global market? Technology has disrupted our industry. If you think about it, in 2007 was when the iPhone was invented. That was only 10 years ago. 2010 is when the iPad was invented. That was only 7 years ago. Today's student who's coming up that traditional way, they know it better than anybody else. I can look out in this audience and look out into our radio audience, and I can guarantee you that if you're over the age of 55, your grandson or granddaughter is programming your particular technology at home. In other words, we're dealing with both structures at Western New Mexico University, and we're trying to do so in a robust way. Now, we each have Board of Regents, at least at the university side. I'm pleased right now I have two of my regents, Dr. Dan Salzwedel, Mr. Jerry Waltz, here with us tonight in the audience, and I have three other regents. We have five regents total appointed by the governor. And our regents challenged us as an institution, how do we maintain our relevancy? Now back to the answer to the question. In 2008, 8% of our courses were offered online. Today, over 45% of our courses are offered online. Yet you see us still with a funding model that goes every year and asks for capital money to build what? Buildings. Not necessarily infrastructure. If I take a look at New Mexico and I take a look at our weaknesses, if you will, I'd put technology infrastructure right at the forefront of that. Because without it, we are going to get further and further behind in our ability to deliver our education. Now, as I take a look at that, our regents felt even more so, as well as our administration, that it's more than just technology. Everybody has a Master's of Business program. How do you make yours relevant? Everybody has a science program and a math program and an English program. How do you make yours relevant when in New Hampshire they can offer the same thing to the students in Silver City and vice versa? So what we have done is we've invested heavily in technology. We've spent quite a bit of money on that. But we've also continued to develop our campus. And why is that important? It's important to have both. There's a model out there if I take a look at the four provinces. Once upon a time, you had University of Phoenix. They got up to 500,000 students. They are now down below 200,000 students. That still is a large number, but not like 500,000. Meanwhile, you have Grand Canyon. Once upon a time, they're on the verge of bankruptcy over in Phoenix. They're now growing leaps and bounds. The two took two different approaches. One, nearly 100% online. Yes, they have the shingles along the freeway. The other one developed a campus and developed their online population. Today, Grand Canyon has about 60,000 students online, 20,000 in person. They've added all the sports, et cetera. Why is that important? Because one thing about an education is about sense of belonging. One thing about an education is identity, and to inculcate that. But not everybody has the luxury to go to Silver City or any place else, and so you have to have both, and you have to invest in both. But back to the relevancy. One of the things we did this last legislative session is we created our institution as a public liberal arts and sciences institution. Now, I know there's some Republicans in here, and instantly you hear the word liberal and you go running for the hills. But I'm here to tell you it's more than that. It's about developing critical thinking. It's about developing those sorts of things. It's about the Kent Waltzes of the world who major in economics and end up running a major newspaper. That's what it's about. And so that's what we're doing there. We're also developing curriculum for businesses. We're also looking at rural education, rural health. We're developing areas of distinction so that we can continue to be, if you will, the Harvard of the Gila, but now the Harvard of the Gila that has all of its availability to offer, whether it's a veteran who's serving in Afghanistan or whether it's somebody else that's just right down the street living in our dormitories, the same opportunity for education. And that's what we're doing there.
Thank you, President Shepherd. We're going to go to Representative Larrañaga now so that he has an opportunity to weigh in here and share his thoughts with us. Representative, are you here? Are you on here?
I'm on. Thanks, first of all, for allowing us forum and compliment all the people who put this thing together. First of all, you know, higher education community, the presidents, of course, Secretary of Higher Ed, and the news media, business people, and the general public gets an opportunity to have them listen in on, I think, a critical issue for the state of New Mexico. We're not necessarily on a crisis situation, but we do have some challenges. And those challenges are when you see declining enrollment that has reduced to 14% in the last 6 years or so, we see the quality of students that are not exactly prepared to get into college and make it in a four-year time period and things like that. We've seen declining revenues at the state level. We've had those challenges over the last 2.5 years. And population stagnation in the state of New Mexico that has made this challenge even worse. So we compliment you for, having the forum together and just saying, what do we do at this point beyond, to rectify some of the things that we need to do to provide a good education, for the workforce, but how do you make that better for everybody involved? And we applaud, you know, the goals you've set. I know that you've set a goal for 66% graduation rate by 2030, which is about 42% right now. That's a lofty goal, but I think that is speaks well about just saying, hey, shoot for the stars. Every once in a while, you just have to what is our goal, and then try to attain that. And maybe you won't reach it, but I know you've made you will make improvements along the way in doing that. Of course, you know, in the financial side where Senator Smith and I are involved with this, we look at higher education, and he spoke a little bit about that, and he said, how much do we contribute to higher education? When in New Mexico, we contribute 12-13% of the tax revenue that we receive at the state. We're on the national average, that's about 5.7%. So what do we need to do in that area there? And look at the local communities and say, where can we get more support in the area of, you know, of financing to keep a good finance structure for the higher education and the universities that we have in the state of New Mexico. So I think one of the areas there is looking at local support, more particularly for the community colleges. We've not heard from them in this discussion just yet, but they're a vital part of the whole education system. And now that we have the transfer of credits and articulation, you know, that has been placed, they have become part of the students that you'll be receiving in the research universities and the comprehensive universities with articulation of doing that. So we look at saying the local support is vital and important at the local level for community colleges as well as the research and comprehensive in doing that. So we have to deal with these issues, and I nothing like a little crisis, and I'm not going to call this a crisis, but I think it's a challenge to get us together thinking about what we need to do for the next step. We applaud some of the universities that are looking at the management, the restructuring, the shared governance that you are looking at, because you probably have a better answers at some point in how to manage the education system in the state of New Mexico, because you have your hands in the mud. You're the ones dealing with that on an everyday basis. We look at it just as what amount of revenue can we afford, and how much can the state contribute to that? And certainly, we see how critical, and we know how critical this is. But during the time when we've had this budget crisis, we've seen the lottery scholarship reduced. We've seen, us having to deal with the budgetary challenges at the state level, and you're affected by that. There's no doubt that you're part of the big pie, and so you certainly feel the pinch when we don't have that type of revenue coming in. So you've been part of the problem. Or part of the challenges that we've had in trying to fund, the institutions of higher learning in doing that. The other issue is with the population stagnation, we've seen fewer and fewer students or lower enrollment. That means that you don't have those enrollments increase and pay the tuition. So how can you manage some of that, in the workforce? You have your own workforce within the universities. How do you manage that? And so it becomes a challenge. You're looking at that, and we compliment you. Absolutely compliment you for looking at that. There is, like I say, not everything is a downside or a bad situation at this point. You know, we see the economy as being improving. A little bit. We see an increase in the graduation rates from high school, which means your product is at least 75% or so are graduating from high school, which is an improvement. So you're getting a better product coming into the institutes higher learning. And you've taken a business approach to this. You're looking at this as a business approach. How do we deal with the situation? And for that, you know, we're partnered with you guys in trying to look at this and deal with that in a business manner. But most of all, and we compliment you in just saying we see you as recognizing that there are limited resources, you know, for what you are going to be receiving, because that's what we're you know, dealing with as economic is improving, but we're still dealing with the idea that you still have to look at that as limited resources that will be available at the state level for doing that. So in that respect, you know, we understand that you recognize that, and you've been dealing with that, and you're looking at that. And we compliment you also because you were the guys that were put on the front burner when in this last legislative session, and your whole budget was vetoed. And in a sense, I guess to get us all back together and look at what we needed to, balance a budget, and that's what we're required to do that. And so you didn't come in and just saying, oh my gosh, my hair's on fire and things like that. You dealt with it in a professional way, and so we back with the, you know, with a readjustment of the budget in the special session to deal with that. So we'll continue to do that. I know that the recession is ending. We know, we hope it is, and at least it's looking better than has been. You're also part of the workforce solution, trained workforce. You are the ones that will make or help us, you know, with improving the economic development in the state and job creation. So if you provide the workforce that is needed for that, whether it's a two-year institutions, whether it's the branch college of comprehensives or the research institutions in the state of New Mexico, you're part of the workforce that will be needed. That you will be the ones that will be providing that for us to help us improve the economic situation in the state of New Mexico. So we thank you for doing that. Thanks for allowing us to be a part of this forum, and we'll sit and listen for a little while and continue to work with you in the future to make those adjustments to make New Mexico's condition better for everyone.
Representative, before I let you go right now, when you talk about exploring options for additional local resources, can you elaborate on that a little bit? How does that work in your mind?
Well, absolutely, and the workforce. I'm a business person, and if I know I need a workforce and a kind of specialty, I think we ought to be looking at the CNMs, junior colleges, and things like that in a way that just saying you can address this issue for us. And the business community ought to be part of the solution for this. You know, obviously, they're you know, we're in business, or a business person just saying, I can help with that. Not just the business community. There's a tax structure at the local level when you have mill levy and other ways to address that issue. I think we ought to be looking at that and just saying, this is how the local entities and local community can help the institutions of higher learning deal with that financial situation at their local level.
Thank you very much, Representative, and we do appreciate if you can stick around for a while. We understand if you don't, and give my regards to Tommy Roberts, who's one of my law school classmates. So.
So very much, and we'll certainly relay that to Tommy, and we'll even maybe he'll shoot a couple of basketballs and show us how the Hobos used to play basketball in the early 70s. Okay.
He was also a pretty good wide receiver on the intramural football team.
Okay, all right. Well, let him know that.